Team Time.
Hi, welcome to Team Time. I'm your host, Debbie Waith, and I'm here to share with you a series of podcasts aimed at supporting those leading and in teams. I'm going to share my personal story as a woman who has led many teams in large organisations and in several countries. I've also been coaching leaders and teams for over 10 years, and I'll draw on this experience to support your journey as a leader and all the other hats that you might wear. So this is the second episode that I plan to do regarding racial inequality. The first one last week's was really me exploring what white privilege meant within this debate and what it meant for me, and learning some of the distinctions and language that's important in this debate. This particular episode is going to be more focused on, so what can we do to have better conversations in this space? And that applies equally to leaders, to others within teams, and even within our home environments. You know, what's the nature of the conversations we're having with our children and in our homes? Because whilst this is held at a structural and systemic level, it's also deeply rooted in who we are as people. And that level of consciousness within the family and the discussions that we're able to have within the family are also really important. So I wanted to reflect first on what I've learned or reflected on since the episode I did last week. One of them is to face or step into the fact that the issue here isn't about white privilege as such, but it is one of the distractions that take the conversation away from what we really need to be talking about around race inequality. And in many ways, I think that it's part of our job to not get so distracted by what it feels like for us as white people in this process. You know, that is part of it. We can't deny that that is part of it. And indeed, what this is going to take is a shift in power and where that power has resided for a very long time. But it's also, for me, just highlighted a little more clearly that whilst understanding the term white privilege and, you know, owning what our power is in any given situation, what we can't do is get stuck in it. In many ways, that's just another symbol of the privilege getting stuck in and about ourselves, rather than focusing on what's needed to enable greater equality across all races. What I learned from you feeding back to me last week was that lots of us hadn't known the difference between what the terms not racist or non-racist and anti-racist actually meant. And yet it's such a profoundly important difference. So for anyone that didn't hear the episode last week, the distinction being, I don't personally commit racist acts compared with I actively stand up against racism. And it really is, you know, a shift from inaction to action and intention. I'm yet to find anyone that actually likes the acronym BAME. So Black, Asian, Minority, Ethnic, for all that it hides within that sort of considerable umbrella term. And it really makes me question, why do we continue to use it, other than the fact we know it's an easy way to kind of collect data? But what does it really tell us when it's collected at such a high level and it's missing the nuance and the intersectionality within those populations? You know, I'm questioning, what is it that it could move to? What would that be? I'd love to hear some answers or some thoughts on that, because it is something, it's a term that nobody, including myself, you know, is really happy with. I think the other thing I've reflected on from last week's episode, probably more than any of the ones that came before, is that actually it feels quite nerve-wracking stepping out into more public light on something that's as important as this. Important, but also recognizing quite divisive. But I strongly believe, you know, we can't let this be the fight of only those directly affected. We are all indirectly affected by an unjust society and the suffering of those in parts of our society. Equally, I don't think I'm ever going to feel like I've done enough reading or listening and learning. And I'm not trying to present myself as if I, you know, have had some epiphany and I know all the answers. I don't. But I do want to keep sharing what my journey is through this, perhaps to demonstrate and demystify for you. In some ways, it's okay to not know yet and still to be learning. You know, it is incomplete and it's not perfect. But, you know, I don't think with an issue as complex as this that we can ever aim for perfection or completion, because I don't think we're ever going to attain that. In which case, we just have to keep, you know, shifting the dial on, have I learned a little more? And I think I could say that I've learned a little more. And so, you know, let's keep that conversation going. Today is going to be about, so what can you do? What can I do? Whether we're leading others, whether we're in a team of others, whether we're considering our home team, what can we do to better host these complex conversations? And in the episode that follows, I'm going to take a sort of even wider bird's eye view, if you like, of considering an organisational systemic perspective, what and how diversity and inclusion architecture shows up in organisations and, you know, the impact that it might have. So this podcast might feel a little different in that I'm going to be sharing some of the learnings that I have learned over the last 10 years where I've been working with either groups of leaders or teams, often in, you know, a sort of teaching environment, a business school I work at, and also working in a consulting manner. And I want to share some of what I've learned in how to host some of these conversations in this spirit that these are conversations that many find intimidating and often indeed shy away from having what are incredibly important conversations. From my experience working both with the public sector and private sector organisations, I think inclusion is still an add-on rather than an integral part of how organisations actually value people. And, you know, as I've reflected over the last few weeks in particular, it strikes me how much diversity and inclusion, or D&I, shows up often through leadership programmes. But it's as if it's not important until people get to leadership. And I think there's something that needs to be shaken at the roots to say, you know, this has to be important to all. What is the unintended message to those that are marginalised if it only becomes important once somebody has reached a certain status? My other reflection in working with those leaders is that many feel ill-equipped and that these conversations often feel quite risky or dangerous. People often fear getting it wrong or being judged for, you know, getting the language wrong or perhaps even sharing something that they feel or think, whether it's construed correctly or incorrectly. People tend to not share for fear of judgment. You know, it's just hits me more clearly than ever that we can't let the subject of racial equality continue as this secret fear. We have to bring it out into the open. One of the learnings for me around 15 years ago was when working on an issue such as gender inequality, you know, it took us a long time to realise that the people you needed in the room weren't only women. You know, you need a space and an invitation where we come together to talk about something important. And it's not just that section of any particular community that needs to come and talk about it. Just like diversity isn't for any minority or marginalised voices to fix, it's never going to get improved if we expect that minority to be able to do it themselves. I strongly believe that we will do more work better together if we can do it by coming together rather than by separating into those communities with the prospect of further division and fragmentation. So that's my hope, that by sharing some of what I've learned in relation to facilitating difficult conversations, that each of us might feel better equipped. And just to address something head on, what this is not for me is to say that you need to bring in people like me to facilitate these conversations. That is explicitly not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we all, whether we're a leader or somebody in another team setting, we all need to build our competence and confidence in having and hosting complex conversations. You cannot delegate it or contract it out to somebody else to have. That isn't having the conversation. That's trying to equip people to have a conversation that's yet to come. It's not the same thing as having the conversation. So one way that I find it helpful to sort of set up for this is to consider the difference in terms of how we feel mindset and tone in whether we're going to have a difficult conversation or whether we're going to have a conversation about something that is difficult. There is a subtle yet important difference between going into a conversation and how we feel going into a conversation that we know is difficult and complex and yet important to do. And I think there's a shift in what becomes possible if we can leave behind the sense that this is going to be a difficult conversation to a conversation about something that is difficult and complex. I think the reality is we will be in conversations in our organisations regarding racial inequality. And my hope is through sharing some thoughts, techniques and tips with you, that those can be more generative conversations, more thoughtful dialogue than they might otherwise have been. And in the spirit of that, I wanted to offer you a frame to consider. Like all good leadership training, of course, you always need to have some kind of diagram. And the diagram that I wanted to offer you as a way to consider your role and this conversation is a Venn diagram. So that's three intersecting circles that overlap each other with this small intersected middle. And then I want you also to imagine this wider circle going around all three of the intersecting circles. I am going to put up an example on my website, Future You, under podcast resources. So anyone that is finding that difficult to visualise, you can go there. And I want you to consider, in the spirit of this frame, that the widest circle, the one that goes round the smaller intersecting circles, that is context. And by context, I'd like you to have done some thinking, possibly even some homework, before you go into these conversations. And the context relates to, I mean, there is just a general history level here. And I think it's fair to say most of us didn't really get much education around Black history as part of our sort of standard education. Anything that we've found, you know, has had to be mined or is as a consequence of these recent movements. So there's something about, do you understand enough about the history of what's got us here? I personally am reading Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Rennie Edo Lodge. And I'm finding it really interesting to better understand some of the history, particularly how it shows up across different parts of England and the United Kingdom as well. Because there are different histories depending on the era and what was happening in terms of socioeconomic factors in the different areas as well. And I think the book does a really good job of recognising where some of this subconscious messaging around Black people and people of colour has come from in terms of references made to crime, to education, to employment, you know, things that I don't think many of us have probably explicitly thought about, and yet there's some deep-rooted history. One example to offer you was the term mugging, which, you know, in my age group, mugging was, you know, just a reference to a particular type of crime. I hadn't realised that it is actually a term that came from America, that it was about a robbery a sort of an individual, you know, person's robbery with violence that was most associated in America to black people. And so this term mugging actually carried a racial connotation, even though, you know, anyone sitting there thinking, well, if it's about the way the crime is perpetrated, well, that's not race specific. How can that be taken back to one particular? But because of its history and how that word was used in America, that was what came when it came to our country. And I would certainly say in, you know, the decades that I've known what that word meant, never was it explained to me that it had a racial connotation. So even words in our common vernacular, do we even realise what they mean or can mean by association? So in that context circle, I want you to really consider where are you of the sort of generalised experience within the minority ethnic races of what life has been like in their families and particularly in organisations. A question I'd encourage you to ask yourself is, how trusting would you think it feels once you have a better understanding of some of that history? You know, have organisations and institutions typically in the past represented and stood up for you? I'd also ask you to do your homework in relation to your own organisation. You know, what is your, both, you know, today and in the past, what has been your approach to valuing difference and valuing the experience of all? And how do you know this? I mean, typically, and we'll talk more about this in the next episode, but typically the measures are related to percentages of people of different race being recruited or being promoted. And of course, those are useful measures. But I'd also be interested in the measures that speak to whether I feel I belong in this organisation, whether I feel supported and represented by this organisation, whether I feel involved and valued in decision-making in this organisation. So really get to grips with what is the context within which you will be having a conversation, whether it's planned or impromptu, around race. I want now to go into the three smaller circles, the ones that are representing the Venn diagram. And the first one that I want to talk to is you. I think whenever you're in a conversation about something that is difficult and complex, what you really have to do first is to know yourself well. You have to know what you are bringing to the conversation. You have to have a level of self-awareness as to any presumptions or history or associations you have. And you have to also be aware of the impact you have on others. We need to have an understanding of what our own implicit or unconscious biases are. And by that, I mean those that are not necessarily at our level of consciousness, but biases that impact on our behaviour nonetheless. Now, Harvard have run a number of experiments in this space, which are called the implicit association tests, and they're freely available for anyone to take. So I'd encourage you to do that. To, you know, I think most of us would say, well, you know, do you have biases? No, of course, I not me. I don't have any biases. And yet we all do. You know, it's part of human nature that we do have preferences, and the, you know, the corollary, if you like, to preferences is biases. We don't like to admit that we do because we like to think we're above that. You know, we've kind of evolved to be more open and recognizing the value of difference, and yet we do have inherent learned biases. So I'd encourage you, either look up implicit association test or look up Project Implicit, which Harvard are running just now. The tests aren't necessarily on race. Certainly Project Implicit, it's a random test that you'll be given, but it will give you a sense of the nature of those tests and just how sort of deeply hidden some of our own biases actually are. So know yourself well. Do some homework on learning some of your own implicit and unconscious biases and recognize what's uncomfortable for you in respect of the conversation. What makes it difficult for you? Perhaps it's the language, perhaps it's the fear of judgment, perhaps there's some shame. But what is it that's hard that you recognize? I think you also need to be clear when you're going into these types of conversations about where you are in your own journey on this. As I said earlier, I don't think anyone can claim to be perfect or complete. But there are things that we need to unlearn and learn, and to share where you are on your journey can be really powerful to help others. And I think the pair of I'm still learning has to be, and I'd welcome feedback. You know, we are all going to make mistakes. We are all inevitably going to get it wrong. You will get things wrong. But this shouldn't be a one go and then I'm gone. You know, it's hard, and Brené Brown talks about it as stepping into the arena, and there'll be lots of people in those higher up seats that might throw stones at you, and you've still got to do it. The second of the three Venn diagram circles speaks to those who are affected. So I'm imagining you might have a team or a group of people at work, and whether, as I mentioned before, it's a planned discussion or an impromptu discussion, you know, sometimes you just know when that's the discussion that we need to have. It certainly happened for me a few years ago when I was working with a big group, and it was a leadership development program. As you can imagine, as ever, there tend to be quite packed agendas. And yet it became really clear that the conversation we needed to have was about the Me Too movement. It hit the press, you know, in the days before, and it was one of these sort of elephants in the room that we seemed to be avoiding, and it was flavoring, you know, what was happening within the group. So we just had to say stop. You know, this is a leadership program. If we can't recognize within this space that what we have to attend to is staring us in the face and getting in the way of us being able to have a good relationship, then when will we? And that was a very powerful conversation, because we were all meeting each other where we needed to be. We might not have wanted to be there, but we needed to be there. So when I think about the teams that you might be having these conversations with, or the team members, or perhaps a wider group, there are a few things that I would recommend that you do. The first is, before any such meeting, or if it's an impromptu meeting, trying to find that moment beforehand to check expectations and agree some boundaries here. You know, it can feel incredibly exposing to have, or to be bounced into a meeting which is about a topic as deeply personal as racial injustice or racial inequality, and not feel as though you're clear on the intention or the boundaries, other than in open discussion, where we can often feel as though peer pressured into agreeing with either what the senior leader says or what my peers say. So find a way to check those boundaries before you hold any such conversations. I think the other key one is, you know, I've been in many organisations, and still very often the minority will be Black and people of colour in these teams. And what you also need to be careful of is that you're neither asking people who are black or people of colour to represent on behalf of entire races. I can't do that for all women. I can't do that for people from a low socioeconomic background. I can only speak to my own story. And so you need to be careful that you're not expecting people to represent more than they can. Equally, this isn't about tokenism. You know, be really careful about who and why you have invited to groups, and whether it's based on truly moving the dial on something or whether you're playing a numbers game. You know, we all know the difference. We can feel the difference. One of the most important roles you can play when you are the host or convener of a conversation that is complex is to be clear with yourself and the people in that discussion. What is the intention of the discussion or conversation that you're going to have that day? So the intention both in the conversation and the intention beyond the conversation. Your role as host or convener is not to be the content expert, nor is it to be the hierarchy. Your role will be to help enable a conversation within that group. And the biggest thing you can do is listen fully and with an open heart. Sometimes I think it can be a shock to leaders when the role that they're being asked to do in a group is not to be the centre of gravity around, you know, which all must float. You will need to proactively help people understand that you're not there as the leader, but there to help enable a real conversation. You can help in this space by sharing what you know and what you don't know at this point, what you understand and what you don't know. Don't pretend to understand, you know, what it feels like to have lived the life of someone from a different race or culture when you can't. You just can't. Do be conscious of any dynamics emerging which might be related to power, to ego, to shame, to history, perhaps even just misunderstandings. Do recognise that emotions are contagious. Contagious even more so when from the leader. So be conscious of what you are bringing and putting into that room. You know, are you bringing some fear, frustration, anger, or care, compassion, curiosity? For those that are in the wider group, so not the affected others in this case, those in a BAME group, there is something about setting up expectations, boundaries, and intention. And one of the things I've really noticed as I've worked with groups around diversity in particular is the power of sharing our story. The power of connecting with the things that do make us different, whether that's race, age, gender, sexual orientation, you know, the list goes on. But often we don't really understand well enough about each other when we're working together. One of the exercises I've used that has been incredibly powerful is an exercise that I call the degrees of difference. There are some things that are of a greater difference or a greater effect due to their difference than others. That's not to say that the hurt is necessarily felt differently, but there is something that says not all differences are the same. Where I've seen this show up quite often is in relation to low socioeconomic status. And I speak from someone that came from a single parent household, grew up in a council house on benefits, and I was the first person from my family to think about and then go to university. So I speak coming from that background, and I know how shaping it is in your childhood and into your adulthood when you've had to scrimp and save and fight for a lot. And for many adults, you know, it's still a very strong part of who they are. And what I've noticed when we've done particularly embodied exercises that try to explore the degrees of difference, that it takes a while for people to recognize and in some ways shift their view of their pain when they see their pain relative to another. And when you hear the story behind what somebody has lived as just their normal life, as a Black woman that came from a low socioeconomic background, you know, it's different. It's different because there were, you know, and the word is privileges, and that's a really hard word for people who come from low socioeconomic backgrounds to sit with. But irrespective, there are privileges based on my colour, on the colour of white-skinned people, that we benefited from and didn't even know. I want to leave you with a few thoughts before I sign off for this episode. You know, I do recognise this probably feels very daunting for some to go into these conversations. And often when we're feeling daunted, we unintentionally tip into wanting to control a little more. And what I'd really encourage you is to allow the conversation to unfold and not to feel as though you have to get it to any particular point or to a neat closure or to a clear set of actions or next steps. I think the power of some of these complex conversations is just allowing the conversation to emerge. The other thing you might want to consider is a particular exercise that practices the quality of our listening. And it's practicing this through an exercise where people are paired and sharing their story and allowing the other person to resonate with that story. And again, this can be a very powerful way to hear and get more into the felt experience than a big group discussion will allow. And I'm going to put a suggested exercise onto my website, futureyoulimited.co.uk, podcast resources. So anyone that wants to have a look at what that paired exercise looks like can find it there. Things not to do. Generally, I would say don't have this as a scribed meeting or written up as meeting notes. You want this conversation to feel free and safe. The purpose is not to document progress or the discussion, but about listening to each other and listening being enough. Don't pretend you know more than you do. That will only get in your own way and lead to a sense of questioning your intention. I mentioned this already, but don't use whatever power that you might have in relation to authority or hierarchy to shape or change the conversation, even if it's getting what you feel difficult. Clearly, you hold a role to create a safe boundary and a safe container for the conversation. And if you feel that is going to be breached, then you have a role to highlight and recognise that on behalf of the group. But it's not driven by you and your personal needs. It's on behalf of the group. Final thing would be, I wouldn't hide from or try to stifle emotion, whether it's your own emotion or that of others. You know, let's be honest, this is an emotive topic and it is one that will likely invoke some degree of emotion. And our job isn't to try to solve that emotion or to hide that emotion, but just to allow it to be. So how do you close a meeting or a conversation like this well? Well, I think the first thing to say is it goes back to your intention And were you clear in setting up at the beginning what was the intention of this conversation? I would typically say these aren't one-off conversations. They have to be part of a live series of conversations. I'd also suggest that you invite the group to consider what feels the right way to close, or at least pause this discussion rather than it necessarily having to come from you. Invariably, whenever we're in complex conversations with a number of people, it's better to use the wisdom of the group rather than of any one individual to determine what's the next right step. I've got two final things to say. One is, what changes here because we're doing it virtually? We have to make a presumption, at least, that some of these conversations happen virtually, given the current situation with the pandemic. And, you know, I guess I would say it is harder. Really, you want to have sufficient opportunity for intimacy to talk, you know, about things that are quite honestly painful and difficult. And so in some ways, you know, what's difficult virtually, I would consider really hard the group size. And I would consider using a platform where you can do small breakout options and not just stay at the big group, so that you can change the energy and allow, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the opportunity for something like a paired exercise. Final thing. So reflecting on, you know, starting this conversation and some of the reflections and feedback I've had from you, is it is in my mind to develop a webinar, whether it's a series of webinars or a one-off, as a free resource to you as leaders to help build confidence and competence in exploring this topic. And really sort of saying, let's do this together rather than try and do all of this work, you know, in isolation. This kind of more than anything, you know, else that's around in the pandemic feels as though it would benefit from the conversation together rather than separately. If you'd be interested, you think, in joining a 60 or 75 minute webinar in the coming weeks, please get in touch on debbie.waith@futureulimited.co.uk and let me know. Hey, this has been a longer episode than normal, and I know I've crammed a lot in here, but I do think it's been, or it is really important to help each other have these conversations better, and really important that we actually do have the conversation. I wish you a hopeful and helpful week ahead. See you next time. If you want to share your thoughts or ask any questions, you can get in touch with me on LinkedIn, Instagram or Twitter under Debbie Waith. I'll post any references I make in the podcast on my website, Future You, under Team Time Resources, and a new podcast will be released every Tuesday. I hope you'll subscribe to join me.
Subscribe to Team Time.